Identification. Would you know one if you saw one? By Father Joseph C. Martin. Father Martin.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, I figure that in this session we'll do the next two guidelines. They kind of go together. Some few years ago, a recovered alcoholic friend of mine had this experience in the Los Angeles area. In a previous drunk, about 2 weeks before this incident, he had had his hair dyed flame red by a girlfriend in the middle of a drunk. All right. This particular night, he and some friends were having a party on the second floor apartment of one of them, and this fellow was rather drunk. He was on the balcony. It was about 3:45 in the morning. He had a telephone in one hand, a bottle of wine in the other, and fell off the balcony. Well, of course, he kind of splattered 6-7 feet below, or however far it is below from one story to another. And he injured his shoulder and his hip. I think he dislocated both of them and broke a couple of ribs. And meanwhile, the neighbors had called the police on account of the noise from this party over in the apartment. So, of course, when the police arrived, they found this fellow crumpled up on the sidewalk there. So, of course, they called an ambulance. They took him to the hospital where his physical needs were patched up. He went to the drunk tank, and I think in the morning he had to stand before the local magistrate and was given whatever it is, 10, 15 days public drunk. Significant, I think. Not one person, not one, from the police who arrived on the scene to the ambulance people who took him and moved him to the hospital, neither the nurse nor the doctor who administered to him, nor the jailer nor the judge who sentenced him, no one said, "Don't you think it's rather strange, young man, to fall off balconies drunk at 4 a.m.? Wonder if you might have a drinking problem." Not one. Would you know one if you saw one? The second guideline is learn to recognize alcoholism through a knowledge of its symptoms. Now, you know, this is like strangling the obvious. It's like stepping out on a beautiful sunny day and saying, "My, isn't that weird? The sky is blue." But it's true. It's true. The failing of human nature is failure to grasp the obvious. Failure to grasp the obvious. Let me give you a few things from my own experience. February 1974, almost 1 year ago, a young 18-year-old serviceman, drunk, racing his car in the middle of the night, decided, for the benefit of a buddy who was sitting beside him, to add to the thrill, turned his headlights off. The car went through a red light, hit another automobile, killed two women, one of whom was pregnant. He himself is married, the father of one child. His wife was expecting her second last June or July. Three lives taken, four lives ruined. Ladies and gentlemen, that kid should not have been in a car. He should have been in care. If a knowledgeable network of people had spotted his problem and done something about it, and his problem was certainly spottable, he could have been diagnosed just like that. Ladies and gentlemen, that automobile accident didn't just happen. That was led up to. That was led up to. 1 month before, out in Oklahoma, two officers of a branch, of one of the branches of our military service, got drunked up in an automobile wreck. Both of them needed surgery. Brain surgery. They could have been spotted years ago. Last April, on the island of Okinawa, a 2-star general made the announcement that during the previous month, March, he had lost two young servicemen, both of whom had choked to death on their own vomit. It is my opinion that these tragedies were preventable. They should never have happened. But because of ignorance, they did. What sense would it make for me to walk out of here on my way to lunch and stop one of you and say, "Gee, I think you better see a doctor about that boil on your neck," unless you have a boil on your neck? How in the world can I help an alcoholic for his alcoholism unless I see he's got it? All right, now what's your definition of an alcoholic? What is one? Any alcoholic can be defined through description. We give descriptive definitions of mysteries, don't we? It's what we do with electricity. It's what we do with life. It's what we do with God. We talk about them by describing them. Now, give a descriptive definition of the alcoholic you know. Well, he's a former corporation lawyer who is bumming quarters for drinks down on Skid Row. Beautiful. That's a perfect definition of an alcoholic. But I wonder if it covers the alcoholic. Could you have spotted him 18 years ago when it was all just starting? When he was earning six figures a year? When he was a top man in his law firm? When he was wearing $500 suits? Could you have spotted the symptoms that were perfectly spottable back then? I'll tell you one misconception that prevents early treatment. If the alcoholic is still functioning, he can't possibly be one. What do you mean he's only 18? These men were officers. How could they have this problem? Do you know how much money this man earns a year? How can he be an alcoholic? We condemn people to death with just such statements. I will learn alcoholism through a knowledge of its symptoms. Ladies and gentlemen, I submit for your consideration that you do not need to be brilliant to grasp them. If a five-year-old can diagnose this disease, so can you. So can you. Now, I'd like to make a comment here about learning and books and colleges and degrees. Don't get me wrong. Don't misinterpret what I'm saying. I am not anti-intellectual. I taught for 21 years. I lived in a world of books. The only thing I'm asking you to do is not to become too enamored of learning, so-called. Have you ever noticed that many geniuses who are emotional cripples have one bid for attention? They club us over the head with how smart they are. If ever you are tempted to be enamored of somebody else's learning and his degrees and he's the head of this and that and the other thing, or if ever you're tempted to be enamored of your own learning and your own list of degrees, just remember this. I picked this up recently. Thermometers have degrees too. And you know where they put some thermometers. Ho, ho, ho. My conclusion from that is this. If you want to be an expert in the field, if you want to get into it professionally, if you have to have some goofy degree to get into it, go ahead. But I submit that you can read the symptoms of alcoholism in about a half hour or less. You know, why is it that we have to snow each other with learning and use big words and all this and that? A five-year-old can diagnose this disease. Ladies and gentlemen, go into the home of an alcoholic and talk to the kid. Kid just doesn't say things like, my mother and father are always fighting. Sometimes it's physical. Kid just doesn't always say things like, my father's usually late for dinner. I hate weekends when he's home. I don't like to be around him and so on. A kid gets right to the heart of the matter. A child's mind is just tuned to truth before it can get all bollocks with growing up. Remember that magnificent story of the emperor's clothes? All the PhDs were like, my, what a beautiful cape. Look at the hat. You know, a little kid says he's naked. You know what a little kid says about her father? She gets through the heart. She gets to the heart of the matter by plowing through all of these results and gets right to what's wrong. She says the obvious. My daddy drinks too much. That's the problem. My daddy drinks too much. That's the problem, my friends. All these other things are nothing but the results of it. And what we do with alcoholism is go after causes and all this. I'll give you my definition of the alcoholic. It is based on what we call a self-evident truth. You can't even prove it. You know what you do when you prove something? You get behind it and show it up in a clearer light. A self-evident truth is just that. It's self-evident. I don't know whether you have most of you have had philosophy classes, I would guess. You remember? I don't know whether you remember this or not, but anyway, there's a thing called the principle of negation. A thing cannot both exist and not exist at the same time. Now, you can't prove that. You see it or you don't. This is my definition of the alcoholic based on this self-evident truth. What makes problems is one. Because it makes problems. That's why it's one. It creates problems. Now, an alcoholic is one whose drinking makes problems. It's simple. It's that simple. If you've got a hole in the sidewalk in the front of your house, and in the last 3 years you've tripped in it and broken your leg 6 times, the hole is a problem. Fill it up. Now, you can sit on your porch and philosophize about causes all you... Well, it's the nature of the clay in this area. It's rather non-porous. And when it rains, it all sloshes down. Horse hockey. If you don't fill the thing up, you're going to trip and break your leg again. The drinker has to be stopped from drinking or he will die from it. Now, ladies and gentlemen, you can slice that melon any way you want, but that's the way it comes out. Please remember this one statement. Drinking alcohol activates this disease. Stopping the drinking arrests the disease. That's the name of the game. Get the alcoholic, quit drink. Once you get him well, you can philosophize all about it, because he ain't going to die right now from his drinking. You've stopped that. Now you can philosophize. Okay, let's go into some of the symptoms of alcoholism. I'm not going into them all because they're available elsewhere. The only thing I would like to do this morning is very briefly discuss a few, just a few, of the initial symptoms of alcoholism. Because we can all spot the disease and diagnose it in someone who's dying of the disease. It is my opinion, this is personal, it is my opinion that the infallible sign of a drinking problem is lying about it. The lie. You see, I use one question to diagnose this disease. Do normal drinkers do this? If the answer is no, you're talking about abnormalcy. Do normal drinkers lie about their drinking? They have no reason to. They have no reason to. By the way, I do not just mean the verbal lie. Wife looks at her husband and says, have you been drinking? Of course, he smells like a brewery. He's ready to collapse, you know. She said, have you been drinking? He says, I haven't had one in the last 8 months. And falls down. That's a lie, all right? We all know that. What I'm talking about is living the lie. This is a person who functions in such a way as to try to convince you that he's not drinking when he is. The alcoholic, bluntly, is some poor guy who holds his breath on an elevator for 19 floors so you won't notice it. He's known as the blue species. By way of contrast, get on the elevator with a normal drinker who smells of alcohol, all right? It's only 11 in the morning. You're riding up, you say, hey, Bill, you been drinking? He says, yeah, I just came from a wedding reception. We toasted the bride. Why? The non-alcoholic has no reason to lie about his drinking. The alcoholic does. Now, please, why is the lie an indication of a drinking problem? Basically and fundamentally because the lie is unnatural. And what makes you do unnatural acts is pretty serious. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm sure you've all read about sexual perversity and unnatural acts in newspapers. My God, the lie makes them pale into insignificance. A lie is a prostitution of the mind. One scientist became a millionaire because he invented a machine that picked up the psychosomatic results of lying. And guess what was behind it? He once made an observation to himself. He said, when I lie, I feel funny. When I lie, I feel funny. Don't you? How many of you guys can really lie to your wives? Gosh, she's got built-in radar. She knows when, you know. And his feeling funny was a psychosomatic result of the lie, which he in turn measured with a machine that he himself invented. His name was Keeler, and the machine is the polygraph. And that's what's behind it. A lie is unnatural. And when you're drinking makes you lie about your drinking, you have a drinking problem. No ifs, ands, or buts. You have a drinking problem. A little bit later, we'll tell you exactly why alcoholics lie about their drinking. Gulping and sneaking drinks. Normal drinkers don't do this. How many of you people know a normal eater who goes to a closet to eat a hamburger? We watch drinkers drink this way all the time and laugh at them. Have you ever embarrassed someone who is sneaking a drink? He's out in the kitchen where the supply is. He's got a big one all fixed up there. He's just about ready to pour it down. You walk in. Hi, Harry. Hi there. Hi. I don't know what to do with it. Normal drinkers don't have to do that. If any of you men were to go home tonight and see your wife sneak out of the dining room into the bathroom, open the toilet tank, pull out a bottle of milk, and drink three shots of it, you'd have her committed in about 5 minutes. We watch alcohol drinkers do this all the time, kind of get a kick out of it. We're all children of the attitudes of our era and of our country and of our race and everything else. I wonder how many of us, if we had been in the Merv Griffith audience, would have laughed too. I suppose most of them. In any given office, there's a man or woman who has to go to the bathroom 8 or 9 times before lunch, on Mondays, on days after holidays. If you know anything about alcoholism, you know why. Poor girl has a hangover. She's heard only about 20% of what has been said during the day in the office. She's shaken to pieces inside. She knows that the whole world is looking at her. She just can't really function. She needs a drink. Alcoholics drink where you can't see them, so they head for the lavatory. Guess what the rest of us do? She gets up, picks up her purse, heads toward the John. We wink, we nudge, and we giggle. And she's dying. Isn't that hilarious? Isn't that hilarious? Why don't we diagnose it then? Simplest reason on the face of the earth. When that girl gets back to her desk, she's the best. She's the best. And functioning and alcoholism just don't go together in my preconceived misconception. She's still functioning. How can she be an alcoholic? That's why we miss her. All you have to do is ask your question, and the obvious almost hits you in the skull. Do normal drinkers go to the toilet to drink? Not usually. Guy gets up from his desk, he's heading out. Where are you going, Charlie? Get a martini. You don't go there for a martini. But the alcoholic does. The alcoholic does. That's the symptom. That's the symptom. The alcoholic is a fellow who has an alibi system that would choke an elephant. Everything is behind his trouble. Never drinking. If she'd only keep her big mouth shut, there would be no drinking. He is now functioning E over I. He is led by feeling, not by reason. His child knows he has a drinking problem. His co-workers know he has a drinking problem. His bosses, his wife, his neighbors, they all know he has a drinking problem. He's the last one to admit it. And since he functions E over I and we think he's crazy, we send him to see a psychiatrist. And what he needs is to get sober. The alcoholic's mind, you see, is functioning backwards. He's looking at causes and calling them results. He said if she'd keep her big mouth shut, there'd be no drinking. Well, if there were no drinking, her mouth wouldn't be open. You know, I'm minded of a magnificent story that illustrates the way an alcoholic's mind works. There was an old lady down in the Ozarks. She's about 89 years old, and she was seen for about 3 straight days pulling a solid iron chain. It was about 100 yards long, pulling this thing, a step at a time, almost falling down with each step. Finally, one old man said, Granny, what are you pulling that chain for? She said, you ever try to push one? That's the way the alcoholic's mind worked. He's pushing chains instead of pulling them. His mind is working backwards. We can all see this. It is so obvious. It is so obvious. Where do we learn these symptoms? I mean, I could go through them here now forevermore, but you learn it from literature. There are books and pamphlets. And by the way, the best literature in the entire world is AA pamphlets. Reason? Number one, they're brief. You can read them in less than 20 minutes. Number two, they're free. Number three, there's not a wasted syllable in them because number four, they are written by pros who have been there. You can learn from movies and lectures and seminars and institutes. But you will learn best from the man who owns one. You know how they teach men to be flyers? They put them in a classroom for so many months, and then they put them in an airplane with somebody that does know how to fly. Your kids right now, you know how they learn to drive a car? They have to put in 30 hours in a classroom, then they get in a car with somebody who does know how to drive. Now, I submit this for your simple, simple consideration. If you were going to buy a pair of roller skates, I don't think you'd go to a Dodge dealer and ask about performance. You want to know something about alcoholism? Yeah, somebody has been there and knows what it's all about. A lot of these jerks that write books about alcoholism probably haven't been on a decent drunk in their lives. See, now, that's one of my adverse attitudes. But anyway. So you know what I'm doing now? I'm inviting all of you to attend a whole lot of open AA meetings. AA meetings are of two kinds, closed and open. Closed is just that. It's real dyed-in-the-wool therapy where alcoholics share with each other. An open meeting is just that. It's open to anyone who's interested. There's one area of the country in which, before every AA meeting, a prologue is read. It spells out a definition of AA, what it is, why it is. And this is the last sentence. We welcome and appreciate the cooperation of the medical profession, the clergy, and the public in general. So you're all invited. Now, many non-alcoholics, that's the last place in the world they're going to go. They'll be experts. They'll treat alcoholics. So have you ever been to any meeting? You want to know some of your own basic attitudes toward alcoholics? I can see some of you non-alcoholics setting out some night, walking into an AA meeting, you know, Wonder who's looking. And then when you get inside, well, how will they know I'm not one? How will they know I'm not one? Most people wouldn't be caught dead at an AA meeting. And yet they profess to come to things like this and say they're really interested. Most of them wouldn't be caught dead at an AA meeting. There is still the stigma of... It's not filth, really. It's just a little coating of slime. And we don't want to be associated with that at all. But anyway, that's where you're going to learn it. That's where you will learn the symptoms. Here's where you will learn that one alcoholic is different from another. Here's where you will learn that what works for one does not work for another. Here's where you will learn the difference in detail, but the sameness of nature. You know, when Dr. Bob and Bill Wilson got together, they were men of two divergent backgrounds. Their drinking was the same, and yet it was different. And if you listen to enough thousands of alcoholics talk about alcoholism, their own, you may indeed begin to get a little notion of what this mystery is all about. Guideline 3 is nothing but a corollary of 2. It is one of the things that you will learn about the disease, but it is of such utmost importance that we treat it separately. Learn that alcohol is the center, the prime reality, and the governing force of the alcoholic's life. This is one of the things you will learn about alcoholism. That alcohol governs the alcoholic. This is what makes him different from the non-alcoholic drinker, the non-alcoholic non-drinker. He is controlled by his addiction. The substance governs his life. Now, ladies and gentlemen, once you realize that, the seemingly irrational behavior of the alcoholic makes sense. I have seen people in this field ask questions that they should never ask at all because they have not yet grasped the fact of addiction. Alcoholism is addiction to drug alcohol. All right? Addiction has two elements in it, compulsion and progression. The alcoholic drinks the way he drinks because he can't not drink that way. Please believe this. If willpower could handle alcoholism, there would be no alcoholics. Every alcoholic has willed to not drink. And so, once you know that without proper therapy, the alcoholic will drink because he has to, then be prepared when he says never again for him to get drunk. Be prepared when he says never more than three, for him to drink 23. Once you know the nature of what's wrong with him, he drinks against his will, you can predict everything that's going to happen. Now, please, let's go back to the graveyard. When somebody looks at you and says, well, I know a man who showed up drunk at his mother's funeral, you say, of course he did. That's what's wrong. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is where I came to my conclusion. When one's drinking causes problems, and doing something like that is a problem, that is the drinking problem that I call alcoholism. Why, he told me a lie, and you could see that he was lying. Yes, alcoholics lie when you know they're lying. Now, do you want to know why alcoholics lie about their drinking? Alcohol is the center, the prime reality, and the governing force of his life. If he talks to you and tells you the truth about his drinking, you're going to tell him to not drink, and he can't do that. And so the lie becomes natural to the alcoholic. Let's get to treatment just briefly. I know of a man in one of the branches of our armed services who maintains that he can cure this disease in 10 days by using electricity. The man is a fool. Here's an alcoholic who has lied and broken his word and broken promises and broken pledges for 18 years. Electricity never handled a sense of remorse, my friends, and here's a man who's lived with it all his life. The treatment for alcoholism has to take into consideration the nature of the disease. Alcoholism, this addiction, is illness of body, mind, emotion, and soul caused by the compulsive use of beverage alcohol. The treatment has to restore health of body, mind, emotion, and soul by stopping the drinking of alcohol and substituting a new way of life. And any therapy that doesn't do this ought to be blasted off the face of the earth. I know this is slight rambling, but I think it's to the point. Anyways, once you understand that alcohol controls his life, you understand why he associates with the people he does, why he goes the places he does, why he keeps the hours he keeps, all according to his own pattern. Alcohol dictates all of this. The will is almost gone. It's almost gone. When an alcoholic says never again, he means that. He means that. When an alcoholic says never more than two, he means that. Getting well is not a question of goodwill only. It's a question of taking the proper medicine. And if the therapy is not proper, then when a man with all the goodwill in the world, he'd give his soul to back up his sincerity when he says never again, and he's drunk 2 days from now. And anyone who knows anything about alcoholism says, of course he was drunk. He's not using the proper medication to get well. He's not using the right medicine to get well. Anyways, for those of you in the room who can't understand compulsion to drink beverage alcohol, try on any of the other addictions. There are five basic addictions: narcotics, alcohol, food. There are people who run into closets to eat hamburgers, but they are not natural eaters. They are not normal eaters. They are compulsive eaters. Then the other two, gambling and work. Now, everybody knows a work addict, the compulsive cleaner. Maybe you live with one. Maybe you are one. But have you ever been in a home that is so clean, looks like nobody lives there? You feel guilty about having your feet on the floor and there's nowhere else to put them. You're sitting there, she empties the ashtray 20 times in an hour. And you don't smoke. Just clean, clean, clean. Now, we can laugh at that addiction because the results are nothing. There's nothing antisocial about the compulsive cleaner. But boy, the ramifications of compulsive drinking are legion. They're legion. It controls his life and it explains him. You begin to predict the antisocial behavior. By the way, that's another symptom, the antisocial behavior of the alcoholic. I usually say so many times, it's perfectly normal to stand on pianos and sing songs at parties. That's what we have parties for. But the alcoholic will go into a neighbor's house and hop up on his piano with his golf shoes on and puke on his floor. That's frowned upon. That is not normal activity. How many of you can look at the alcoholic you know and say, he's a wonderful fellow when he's sober? When he's sober. When he's sober. I have to learn this disease in order to know what it is that I'm helping someone for. And if he has it and I don't spot it, he will probably die before I can help him. Ladies and gentlemen, they tell me that there are certain types of cancer that are so insidious that when they get to the stage where they can be detected, it's too late. Just too late. It is almost that with many alcoholics. But hopefully, precisely because of people like yourself, this illness is being diagnosed early. And people are being gotten into treatment. At a facility where I help out at once a month, there is a 13-year-old patient. I met a young kid in Washington the other day, 16. And the under 35 groups in AA are just mushrooming around. So let's learn the disease so that at least we can diagnose it and get alcoholics into proper treatment. But anyway, we have to have proper attitudes. We have to realize the symptoms of the disease in order to know that it is there, the main one of which is this compulsion to drink alcohol, the compulsion to drink alcohol. Willpower has nothing to do with this disease. And ladies and gentlemen, before we break up for lunch, I'd like you to consider this one thing. If there are any of you in this room who still feel that alcoholism is immoral, I'm not talking about alcoholic behavior. That can be very immoral, and that is why AA therapy demands that they take a moral inventory. I'm talking about the disease, the morality, the moral nature of the disease. If any of you think that an alcoholic is blameworthy because he has this disease, let's try this 5-second exercise. Let's everybody in the room go back to age 12. You're in the 7th grade. Mentally, close your eyes and write on a slip of paper what you want to be when you grow up. How many of you wrote drunk? Nobody. Nobody. No one is an alcoholic by choice. We'll see you after lunch.